Hello and welcome to Muse and Metrics. This is your host, Philippa Burgess. This is season 5, episode 9, and today's topic is coding for good.
My name is Brandi Jamar. I am one of Google's many women in tech maker ambassadors. I am also the CEO and founder of my company, SmileMod, and I'm excited to be here to share my journey with you guys today.
Love it. Well, welcome. Let's just talk about how long you've been involved in Women Tech Makers.
Honestly, I've only been involved for about a year. I have done and been involved in so many different things in this 1 year that I've been a part of them. I did do my own event for IWD, International Women's Day. That went off successfully. I've helped others get their events together for International Women's Day. There is another event that they're having. This one is based, those that are a part of LGBTQ community, among them in technology, that's happening in Toronto at the end of this month. So I'm planning on going to that. So this one little small year has been great.
What brought you, what inspired you to get involved in tech?
Oh man, I've been doing tech, I can honestly say, about all my life. The sad thing is, I'd like to kind of joke that I got the kind of typical tech story that people in my age range kind of have. We kind of knew how to work the VCR for our grandparents, and it was like magic. But that's really what kind of got it started, because they thought that I just done this miraculous thing. I wanted to get deeper involved with computers and technology. So what I actually started doing, grammar school, we would have early dismissals. Some days I would get out at like 11, 11:45, sometime around there. My parents would still be at work. So my father's mother, she was a computer teacher. Very early on, she was teaching on, before Apple was Apple, it was Macintosh. And before it was an Apple, it was a Rainbow Parrot. So, you know, way back then. But she was teaching that class. And so around like second or third grade, I was sitting in on that class with like eighth graders. So very quickly, at a very young age, I was able to learn what a GUI system was, learn how to type, understand products like Microsoft Word. So I just caught on very quickly at a young age and took off running from there.
For those who don't know GUI, it's the graphic user interface. And I found myself asking that question when I was especially chatting with an Uber driver, and he's like, blah, 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 GUI. And I was like, what's GUI? Oh, yeah. Okay. Graphical user interface. But, you know, foundational terms. I think that's one thing about being part of a community and learning something is starting to learn those language and those acronyms. And that's great when you can get an early start. I think it really speaks to the power of the people that we look up to, the people we admire, the people who teach us, and the role of role models. So where'd you go from there? So you've got that grandma who's obviously very tech competent.
Yes. After that, I was still very young, so they weren't really teaching IT or computers, you know, in second or third grade. So I kind of just taught myself. Like, of course, we had a computer in the house. So with her being a computer teacher, she'll kind of just teach me small things on the side. She taught me how to type. She actually taught me what Google was. I had no clue what Google was until she told me. Just getting kind of like, I would like to call it back-end work from her at a very young age. Once I got to high school, learning how to type and create websites, back before we had all these miraculous tools that helps us create websites, you literally had Notepad. And you had to code on Notepad and you had to save it as an HTML. We didn't have, like, there wasn't the color wheel. You had to read, not necessarily remember, but you had to know color code and different things of that nature. So once I got to high school, that became a requirement to graduate. So I took all those classes all 4 years in high school. Then after that, funny thing is, I switched gears. I didn't study that in college. I went to college for graphic arts. And I guess I just needed a break for a while. But I honestly just found myself lacking passion in my life. So I honestly just started small. I taught myself how to code. I taught myself continuously how to build websites. I went on my own and got my own certifications, paid for them out of pocket myself. So I don't have what I like to call a traditional background. You know, I just didn't go to school and, oh, I got a degree. No, I went a different way. And I did that for a reason. I did try to study it in college for a little while. I had a professor, though, and not in a bad way. I had a professor that kind of told me that, you know, in a class full of women, that getting into the IT field was going to be extremely hard for us because we are women. And he told the truth. He wasn't trying to be malicious or anything. You know, it wasn't like, I am man, you all are women. It wasn't like that. He was being honest. So I took his honesty and I said, well, instead of looking for a seat at the table, I'm just going to build my own table. And so it took a long time, but that's what pushed me to build my company what it is today, SmileMod. And
I
yeah.
can resonate with that on so many levels. One, I think that actually the intersection of the creative and the science is so important because actually, I'm sure actually what you do today, that graphic design background plays into it because
Yes.
you make beautiful things. There's a back end, there's a front end. And
Absolutely.
we're seeing this sort of intersectional. I come from an intersectional of the creative arts and storytelling. And that's what I do now. That has become sort of my front end of being in tech is that I can bring this background I have. I still am working very hard to be very competent in what I'm doing, as in programming, in spatial data science, and my work and my studies are kind of leading me in a direction that has a tech focus, but wants to focus on resiliency and disaster planning, disaster recovery. And there's that side of it. But also in these interviews that I'm doing, I have to say that many people that I'm interviewing come from psychology backgrounds, sociology backgrounds, things that aren't, they may sometimes later went into another tech degree or the certificate. I've talked to people who are absolutely self-trained. I love that. I also went, I did corporate in the entertainment industry, and then I started my own company because I similarly felt that there wasn't a table that I wanted to sit at. There was a lot of tables that I saw, and I was very sensitive to corporate culture and wanting to be in cultures that I appreciated. Now, I will say in my little journey, because it was a little more creative focused, I also was queen of the part-time jobs. So I did sit at a lot of tables, but as a guest, I just was like, I'm popping in, I'm helping out, you're gonna give me a small paycheck, which enables me to do the other things I'm doing in my life. But everybody knew I was capable and smart enough to do the job they tasked me to do, but that I had other things to do. And so I also were, I like, I did a lot of flex work, for example, like with lawyers and paralegal stuff. So it's like, you have a case, you need me. I can work late. I can work weekends, no problem. You don't have a case, you don't need me. I got other things to do. And that worked out great because they knew that I was off building my own little creative business, but I was on call to do whatever they needed to do and it paid well. And so I think that being a business owner is incredibly challenging. I mean, on one level, it's to be admired. But having sat at that table and owned that table, I can also say that there's so many things that you're juggling as a business owner.
Absolutely. When you own a business, you can have, other departments and other people that you're hiring to help, but honestly, you're everything. You're the owner, you're the CEO, you're IT, you're marketing, you're the finance office, you're critical control, you're everything. Customer service, you are everything when you own a business. So I tell everybody just and I had to learn this, honestly. I had to learn this. I have a way more respect for business owners now because I'll be honest, I had a very immature mindset. I'm like, just uppity people that think they're great at everything. Now that I'm in those shoes, I'm like, oh, okay, no, this is different. This is that they're not uppity people. No, they deserve the attitude that they have because they work really, 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 really hard. It's literally the epitome of the phrase blood, sweat, and tears, literally, in every sense of
Yes.
the word.
And there are tears not only on being a business owner, but I was recently on an interview and I got a question in the chat and it said, this is a serious question. This is not a joke. Did you cry when you were learning the software? To which I answered, I not only cried, I have more gray hairs that I've since covered because of it. But yes, these learning curves that we're on can be difficult. They can be really challenging to do things we've never done before and to take on
Absolutely.
responsibilities we haven't done before. But I think part of it, I would also say there's a certain sense of what I'll call educational trauma that I've seen people have. And I think if you don't have educational trauma, you'll work through the tears, you'll work through the blood, you'll work through the sweat, you get to the other side of it. I think where I see people have unresolved educational trauma, that first sign of difficulty comes in, and it all those bad memories of bad teachers, not that they were dumb or had any, like, I think a lot of what happens, I see people take it on, like, I'm not smart enough. And it's like, no, you just weren't taught well. you didn't have that opportunity to learn. And then because you were missing foundational pieces, that came back later where you were missing chunks that then reinforced that trauma. And so now you've got this first sign of difficulty. And those are the people who run for the hills are like, I can't do this because all of this input that they had and this how they self-interpreted is I'm not good enough, I'm not smart enough. And that could also be echoed by people in their environment that they then get these challenges and don't have the fortitude to work through them.
Absolutely.
Whereas when you've had a good foundation and then this difficulty happens, we have to kind of go deep within ourselves going, all right, difficult, don't know what I'm doing, but I'll figure it out, or I'll ask for help, or I will learn how to work through this. And I think it really kind of separates kind of where people can thrive and where people kind of fall apart and just be like, no, this is not for me.
Absolutely. I tell myself, I don't care if you have to cry through it. I don't care if you complain the whole entire time. That's fine, but we're going to get through it. It doesn't matter where we start is where we end. How we get there always doesn't matter. If you cried the whole time, that's okay, but you got there. So it's, if you have that type of mentality, like, okay, look, it's not going to be easy. I'm going to cry. I cry every time I have to learn a new coding language, every single time. Like, as much as I love creating websites, if I had to choose what's my passion, I love creating websites for people. But at the same time, I hate coding. I hate it. So, but it's one of those, it's like I cry every time I look at it. But I love to do it, and I know what I want my end goal to be. So I'll just cry and complain through it, but I'm going to get to the end. I'm going to reach my goal.
I love that, and I do the same thing. I'm very much, it takes me a minute to sit down and say, okay, I actually, yesterday I was showing, I took my phone over and it had my document in it, and I was showing off a map that I made with some data. And before I had this assignment, maybe like 2 weeks ago, I was like, I don't know how I'm gonna do this project. Like, I understand the task, but I don't know how I'm gonna do this project. It is, and obviously there's a learning transformation that the teacher had designed. And I have learned, if anything, I trust the process. It took me three full days. And I had not started early enough. She gave us 2 weeks, but I didn't even open it until Thursday. And it was due on, after a holiday weekend, it was gonna be due Tuesday morning. But I started Friday and I continued Saturday and I continued Sunday. And it was just, was like, whoa, this is a bear, but I'll figure it out. And I was super pleased with the result. I came out the other side. I was like, oh, this is exciting. I figured it out. I got to where we got to. And just to give some context to the project, it was basically, our goal was we're doing GIS customization. So we're learning how to take data and use either Model Builder or ArcPy, which is the ArcGIS Python, or we're using PyCharm, and it was my first time using PyCharm. I'd heard about it, I'd installed it, and I just never kind of opened it and actually got started. So it was just actually my project ended up being just kind of chaotic, because when I looked at other students, they sort of picked one and kind of went with it, and I had all three, but I almost went to one and then hit a wall, and I was like, okay, let's try the other one. And then solved a problem, hit a wall. And then it was like, let's go to the other one. Solved a problem, hit a wall. But I got there. And and I got to experiment with all three. And I guess it's an example. And the particular project, we were using school and earthquake data in Los Angeles to do a prioritization for earthquake retrofitting. And so we were looking to create buffers around the data of like, what's a 1 mile buffer around all the schools, and then which schools, and then each earthquake fault also has levels of how potentially hazardous it's going to be. And then we had to identify like which were the highest risk schools, secondary, third, and fourth, in terms of making recommendations for what would be the like color code, you know, what how they should prioritize a retrofit of LA schools based on very simple data. But that was what we were doing. And it's there were not tears on this one. There were tears in learning the original software. And I was so blessed. Things kind of sometimes work out just without you over planning them. They just worked out. I had two really wonderful clients that I was working with, and both the projects just wrapped their work with me last August. And I started in this GIST certificate program, which is a 1-year program at my university. I just finished a master's in urban planning, And the part of urban planning that I fell in love with was the GIS, the data visualization. Mm-hmm. And I learned that climate impact is real. And I just kind of saw this opportunity to take urban planning where I didn't really know what I wanted to do with urban planning. I was just super interested in it. And I had now had a master's degree in it, but I wanted to take it further. And the data science just like was like, ooh, I want to do that. And I could tell in my courses with my cohort, all of us went quarter to quarter to quarter to quarter with no breaks. And we all kind of went through together for four semesters. And when we did our data science class, or it was big data, and I was the one who loved it, loved coding R, loved just figuring it out. And I hadn't realized the professor had really created a lot of scripts where we were just supposed to hit run, hit run, hit run. And I'm sitting there kind of rewriting the whole thing. They had us in a tight cohort and having to go to his office hours saying, help, I'm stuck. And he's like, okay, you've done like way more than you were supposed to do, but clearly you're interested in this and you're good at this. But part of this came from exactly what you were saying about, I was in college coding HTML. That's where I started. I fell in love with tech kind of in college. And when I was in under my undergrad, I was like, you can build a website. That's so cool. I want to learn how to do this. And so, yeah, I started with HTML. That was the foundation. So it's all there. And even now that we're doing this Python customization course that I'm doing, I'm finding that it's there. I went through the beginner class and I was like, yeah, she's having us do some tutorials just to kind of get everybody on the same level. And I was like, all right, past beginner. I did the intermediate class and I'm like, yep, I'm past this. So it was like, okay, this self-study that I've been doing is kind of paying off.
Mm-hmm.
And we are, and when I was in that urban planning piece, I was, out of all my cohort classmates, I was the one who they would come to ask for help on the programming and the data visualization. I clearly stood out among my classmates as like, that was my thing. Mm-hmm. And so I've been super joyful to sort of proceed. And then once I started the 1-year program, I realized I would need a lot more than 1 year to really get where I needed to go. And I think it just made sense to me to sign up for a full second master's, which is what I'm in right now, in human security and geospatial intelligence. So it's within the same school of spatial data science, or it's the Spatial Sciences Institute. Mm-hmm. And it is an application in human insecurity. And geospatial intelligence is basically, we have satellites that run around our Earth and they take pictures all the time. And so it's like, how do we use that data, or how do we use drone imagery and other things in terms of, so that's kind of where I've landed. So I have another year and a half and I'm just, there's so much I want to learn. I'm just in this huge learning journey.
I love it. But
you as a business owner are also in your own learning journey. Because you're constantly having to take on things. Like, for example, this semester, I'm in a project management course. And I'm looking at it and I was like, I've done project management my whole life and I've never called it project management.
It's weird when you, how can I explain it? Because I kind of understand exactly what you're saying. My dad told me when I went to college, he was telling me, like, you need to get into project management. Honestly, I had no clue what he was talking about either. I got into corporate maybe about, I want to say 2 years ago. I was working downtown Chicago, working for a corporate company. And they had me kind of take lead on different projects. We were building an app for a gas company to basically show people how to get lower rates on their electricity bill. I was in charge of a lot of different projects. Come to find out, just like, you're like, oh, this is project management. I wish somebody would have told me I would have did this a long time ago. I would have been called myself this, So it's funny, when you're taking, like I said, the non-traditional path, you kind of learn that I've been doing this all along. And it's actually a kind of cool confidence boost, if you ask me.
Yes. So within our program, I met someone along the way who has the keys to the Coursera Google certificates, and so I got that scholarship. So I'm in the Coursera Google certificates, and I've opened up all 8 of them, or there's 9. I feel like I do the IT job just as you did the IT support job. That's one of the certificates for family. I'm with my mom right now, and I had surgery, and then she had surgery. We had the summer of surgeries, and there was a point where I could not leave. Like, she was not ready to return to independent living. And now she's almost there. save for the fact that she got a new TV and she cannot work the remote. And so I'm like, I still can't leave. I love my mom. I'll stay as long as she needs me. But it's like the technical stuff is why. And she's like still having trouble with her phone. And I'm like, every other way, she's fine.
My mom just got an iPhone. Like, she literally just came over to iPhone, and she, before it, and I'm not a person that's like, oh, team Android, team iPhone. I'm just like, hey, whatever you like, that's what you like. Because I'll be, if you ask me, it's all the same thing. she had so many more questions for me when she was, had an Android phone. Now that she has an iPhone, she asks me no questions at all. She's like, this thing is so simple. I wish I would have did this a long time ago. And me and my brothers were like, yeah, we tried to tell you, Mom. So it's funny. So maybe you might want to try a different brand of a TV. That might help you out.
Well, I think the thing is we went with the one that has YouTube and cable. Mm-hmm. And she loves the YouTube, but I have to get her the show that she wants. But all her favorite shows live on YouTube or live on the smart TV, whereas mm-hmm. she likes the news and other things. But the cable actually doesn't have the breadth. So ultimately I think she's got the right TV, but there's some work to do. We'll get there. and actually it is because I spend time with older parents now. That was sort of the transition that I went through in the pandemic, and I'm grateful for it. Is I realized and actually one of the modules. So I'm in the 8 modules that I did open up. You know, one's project management, there's data analysis, there's advanced data analysis. User experience. And I feel like a lot of the user experience, I appreciate that they're like, hey, we're thinking about more people when we do design. We're thinking across cultures. We're thinking across race. We're thinking across genders. We're thinking across abilities. But I don't think they're really thinking as well as they need to across age.
Mm-hmm.
I really see that there's a huge, my parents are in their mid 80s, and I am their tech support in a way that the VCR was, you know, we talk about that was magic. Yep. And I do think that a lot of the user experiences that I see my parents go through, it's not inclusive.
Not at all. I think, how can I explain this? I have 3 boys. And so I'm pretty sure, you know, any parent kind of understands the harmfulness of screen time. I believe just like with children, with older people, I believe it's kind of overstimulated. It's too much and not just simple enough. Like prime example, like you were saying with your mom, you're like, well, my mom mainly just watches YouTube. You ask me, I think there needs to be a TV that's just dedicated to YouTube, especially when you have older people that kind of, they get overwhelmed when they have so many features. Again, just like children. So I kind of feel, I agree with you when you say like, it's not across all ages. I do think and wish that we had more technology that geared towards older people, children. I feel like a lot of stuff, like I said, is just very, very overstimulating and it can be overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so that's where I come in.
Exactly.
And as a parent, I think there's a lot that you're looking at related to how your kids interact with technology.
Yeah. So at our house, you know, technology is a thing. You know, I call ourselves a nerdy family. You know, we're the family that you'll see cosplaying in Walmart, and we're that weird family. Like, why is there a group of spider people here? Because of that, like each one of my children have a love for technology, just in a different type of way. So what we really try to do is just kind of steer them and have them understand the good and the bad. Like my youngest right now, he's learning the dangers of chat rooms, because every parent knows Roblox. All kids play Roblox. And sometimes, you know, he thinks that, the people that he's talking to are kids like him. And, you know, we're teaching him like, you know, hey, you know, you don't know. This might not be a kid. This might be an adult. So you have those type of things that, you know, we're kind of in the midst of. My oldest, you know, he's ready to start coding. He's ready to stare at a screen for 24/7. I'm just like, you're not ready for that life yet. You don't understand. My middle child, he's involved in modding. He loves making mods for Minecraft. So it's those kind of small things, again, like we talked about before, that are happening in the background. And I'm hoping that when they start to learn in this school, they're already way ahead of the game. That's the hope.
I love, that's great. Yeah. And that's interesting that they're all at different stages and they're all learning the pros and the cons of where they're at, mm-hmm. And sort of how to stay safe. I mean, safety is a big concern.
Absolutely. Not even just for children, for elderly people too, because I don't know how many spam calls my grandma gets or emails, and it'll be something as small as, you know, hey, your gas bill is overdue or something like that. And she thinks that she has to send this random number money. And it's like, hey, grandma, didn't read the whole thing. And you know, you paid your gas bill last month. You don't got to do it right now. It's just the next week, you know? So you have those different things going on. Even with, again, my oldest son, he's always coming to me, mom, it says it's free. It says it's free. It says it's free. And the first thing I tell him all the time, everything on the internet is a lie. Everything. So if it says it's free, they are lying to you. It is not free. You got to pay something. I don't care. It might be your soul and you don't even know. So it's safety is extremely important when it comes to dealing with technology.
Yes. I had an incident when I was with my dad where one day he clicked on an ad that was totally targeted to him because it's a show that he would watch that was from the 1960s. And so, you know, he saw something, he clicked on it, and an alarm went off. And it was really loud and rah, 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 and he freaked out. And then it had call this number and we can fix this. Mm-hmm. And so he called me into his office and I immediately just shut off the sound and muted his computer. And then it was like, okay, what's the thing? And then I just Googled the number and it was like spam. Like it was clear that it was. And then I just shut the window and problem solved.
Good magic.
but just the sound, he just, you know, and then there was another one where they got him on the phone and it was like, and it for some reason they felt like it was one of those like we've charged you but we'll refund you, and then we over refunded you so you got to send us the money back in gift cards. And he literally went for it. He was literally going out the door to go buy the gift cards with the guy on the phone, and I was like, I'm coming with you. He was mad at me when I was like, stop. He's like, no, I over, like, the guy, you know, they've over. And I was like, and finally I was able to get him to hang up. And then I realized, like, who are you talking to? Okay, let's Google that. Let's call them. Let's call the real number. And it was like he was in a trance. It was like, it was weird how hook, line, and sinker. He was just in the zone with this guy. And, like, the guy wouldn't let him off the phone. And finally, when I was able to, like, break the trance, was he like, whoa, like, what did I just do? What did I just get into?
If you ask me, I'm a very, 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 very weird thinker. So I'm the type of person that think, like, you know, while he was probably on the phone, there probably was, like, a high-pitched sound or something like that going on in the background that he can hear but not hear that probably kept him on the phone. I feel like people do weird stuff like that. I honestly do. So I'm happy you were able to intervene and everything is okay. But I've heard that story, especially with the gift cards. It's like, first of all, like, and I don't challenge anybody to do this, but it's like, you guys got to come up with a new scam. The gift card scam is so old now. But it's sad to say that a lot of elderly people get hooked on that. And I'm happy that you were able to, you know, intervene with your family and not get caught up in that. Cause that, I can only imagine the disaster that would have been.
Yeah. And, you know, they're on fixed income. There's not, you know, an infinite bucket of money to pull from if these mistakes are made. I mean, and so it definitely is, they're targeted. So not only is the user experience not as friendly as it could be, but they're targets for these kind of scams. And I think that there's an honesty, obviously, to your grandmother who wants to pay the bill and wants to make sure she's on time and not getting in trouble. And you know, my parents are the same way. Like, they've always lived their life on, I want to be honest and straightforward and, you know, not owe anybody anything. And so it's, you know, they're quick to attention to sort of make things right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I do wish for a better user experience, which is that's one of the projects that SmileMods is working on. We're trying to branch off into non-for-profits. And so we got one kind of started called Higher, Further, Faster. And the whole purpose of Higher, Further, Faster is knowledge base. It's like, let's be honest, if you're an elderly person, if you could go to bingo, I feel like you could come here and get some awareness about different technology that might actually be threatening to you. not only just resources like that, teaching children basic IT infrastructures, fundamentals and things like that. Because the way I see it, the direction that the world is going into, three things that will never die out, which is technology, transportation, and healthcare. So because I understand that, I want people to have resources and knowledge to be able to continue to go on and make it into the world. Because one thing I kind of took to heart with it, years ago, my grandfather passed away. My grandmother didn't know how to do something as simple as go pull money out the ATM. She didn't know how to do it. And so it's small things like that that I want to have available for people. Like, if you don't know how to do it, don't feel bad. You can come here, we'll teach you. Like, we'll have examples. We'll have PowerPoints. We'll have videos. Like, you don't have to stay not knowing. And I know that, you know, as your parents get older, things like that, they rely, of course, on their younger children. And sometimes that gets hard. You know, I'm trying to run a company. I have children. You know, I'm married. I have a whole family. My life is chaos. You know, sometimes, mom, I can't get to you. But what I can do is I can drop you off at this class where you can learn how to pull money out of the ATM so you can do it yourself.
Yeah, knowing that those resources are available and making that accessible is key. And I love that you're doing that. And I think sometimes it is those most basic things that when we don't know how to do them, we don't even know where to start. Mm-hmm. And then we don't even know who to ask. Or, you know, and like you said, or it's just our immediate family are the only ones that we can kind of go to. And so knowing that there's these other resources that can help, that's fantastic. And I know that nonprofits need they do good work, but they also need that technology help. I was just reading about data with nonprofits and how data analysis can be applied to, as a volunteer opportunity to, you know, for people who are gaining their data analysis chops that they can, you know, connect with nonprofits and a great way to build their portfolio and apply their newly gained skills.
Absolutely. So we should network.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So to get back to more of like, what does Smile Mods do? Where, you know, what's your vision for the company? You started this company, you're growing, you're serving, you're learning how to wear all these hats and growing. And now, you know, sort of there's every role in the company. Are you building a team and you're building your book of business? So yeah, just tell me more about the company.
Okay, well, Smile Mods does everything with a smile, literally. We do any and everything from help businesses build faster productivity all the way to custom gaming PCs. That's why I chose the name Smile Mods, because we modify everything. So right now my vision for Smile Mods is to be the company that's the jack of all trades. Honest, if you want my honest opinion, I want to kind of grow an infrastructure that is kind of like the Walmart of technology, if I can so loosely say it like that. If you want a custom PC built, you can stop at Smile Mods. If you, you know, if you need to know, I need to know how much, I don't know, how to budget my business on the computer. Okay, well, you could use Excel. I'll teach you how to use Excel. Or what I could do is I have a team of people that will do it for you. Like a prime example right now, one of our biggest contracts is with a school bus company called TWF Transportation. We are over all their IT stuff, everything. We run their bus trackers, camera systems, their productivity management. Like we control all of that. That's the biggest thing right now. My next venture for Smile Mods, once that's kind of going and completing, is getting into smart homes. That's going to be the next venture for Smile Mods. That we're going to, you know, develop AIs and smart homes. So I don't have a big team. It's just me and my wife. So honestly, am I building a team? Yes, because as this grows, I'm going to need help. I'm a firm believer that if I'm the smartest person in the room, that's a problem. So that's my vision for Smile Mods, to kind of be like me. Jack of all trades, does any and everything that's related to technology. I am developing my own server platform so I can host and manage my own websites myself and not have to go through third parties such as like GoDaddy or Amazon AWS, things like that. I'm also, like I said, we're building custom PCs, but not just like regular gaming PCs. Like, oh, I have a PC gaming kit. No, if you call me and you say, hey, I want a computer that is submerged in water. That's exactly what I want. I can build it. And it's fully functional running. You're gonna be like, wait, you could build a computer submerged in water? Yes, because I studied technology and I know what liquid to put it in and not real water. But just like I said, I want it to be like me. I want it to be a jack of all trades. And with that being the jack of all trades, I want to branch off into any and everything to provide resources for everyone, especially people like me that go the untraditional route.
So you really do bring creativity into tech because you're going to take things that possibly haven't been done before and say, let's get it done. Let's figure it out. If it can be done, we at our team can figure out how to do that. Now, we also might have to give you an appropriate invoice for that, but there's challenges that we're willing to take on that other people who have more set frameworks probably are saying, no, that's outside of our lane. And your whole lane is let's do the cool things that need to be done, and that we will modify it for you and really do custom technology.
Exactly. Another venture I'm studying into is how to make your picture on t-shirts. When you scan it, it brings like a video up on your phone. I saw there's another company that does it. They're called Marathon Clothing. That's my next big venture. I'm going to be the next one to do it. So just literally exactly what you said. I'm bringing creativity into tech.
It would just essential because that's ultimately how tech succeeds, because it does the next thing that we've all not thought about. And then when we see it, we're like, oh, that's the most obvious thing. But why didn't none of us think about that before?
Exactly. But every idea is crazy until it is done. Then it's no longer crazy. I'm pretty sure when, Amazon was like, well, hey, we're going to be a service that delivers packages. I'm pretty sure nobody thought that it would be what it is today.
No, and it was built on the foundation of several failed initiatives. They tried and it didn't work, and they tried and it didn't work, and they tried and then something worked, and then something and so I think you have to also, I think that's part of creativity is the willingness to fail, the willingness to experiment, the willingness to risk and just try things and iterate. And that's
Absolutely.
one of the things I was just doing one of my project management modules, and I was talking about like the difference of a linear style or a iterative style. And I think in just how I work creatively, I'm an iterative person. I want to, it's just with things that have been done before and it's the same process, then you just do them one step at a time because you know exactly what the steps are. But when you're iterating, sometimes you don't even know what the next step is until you get your first prototype together or get some initial feedback, and then you sort of say, oh, okay, now I see what I can do next.
Absolutely. You don't learn unless you fail. You have to fail. It's inevitable. If you don't fail, there's no way you're learning.
And going back to the tears and the frustrations of failing, because sometimes that's not without an emotional impact, I think that a lot of it is having the emotional fortitude to sort of work through that and to be in those uncomfortable places. And then it leads me to my favorite quote, which is, if it was easy, everybody would do it. And I love the
Absolutely.
fact that when I'm going through something difficult and I'm learning something and it's hard, I bless that hard. We talked about you being from Chicago and that I have said to people, bless your weather. Because if not for your weather, 44 million other people would live in Chicago because it's a beautiful city and it's got so much going on and great culture, great arts, great history, great community, great culture. Like I love Chicago, but your weather actually protects you from the rest of us all descending and moving to your city. And so in some ways, it ends up being a more livable city because it's not inundated with the rest of the country.
Absolutely.
And so sometimes it's like you have to bless the things that are difficult because they actually serve you.
I think, with me, if you see me in a high stressful moment, you will be like, oh my gosh, she's gonna quit. She hates this. And if I honestly were to ask myself, I would probably tell myself, like, yeah, that's exactly what you're about to do. But I think deep down inside, like really, really deep, I enjoy the challenge because I keep coming back to it. I don't let it go. And so, if you got to be honest with yourself sometimes. Like, okay, like, I'm just frustrated right now because I can't figure it out. I really do love this. I don't hate it. The world is not about to explode. It's okay. You know, in this journey, the one thing I'm trying to still learn, I've not mastered, I'm still learning to embrace my failures. It took a very long time for Smile Mods to get where it is today. Smile Mods used to just be a thought that I honestly, when I was young, stupid, and it transformed to a dream. And now here it is reality. So, you know, embrace failure. It's okay. Just cry through it. I tell everybody. I even tell my son when he's frustrated, just cry through it. You'll be okay. So I feel like it makes me stronger in the end. And sometimes we don't know that because we get so caught up in our emotions because we just want it to happen and we just want it to work right now. And when you sit back and actually think about it, and you look at your journey, you actually get to see, like, you know, no, I used to kind of just scoot, and my scoot turned to crawling, my crawling turned to walking, and now I'm running, and now you can't stop me. And it's one of those, take some time and just be grateful for where you are, because when you're grateful for where you are, you can see where you came from, and I feel like sometimes that will propel you. It gives you that push that's necessary to keep going.
And I think that comes back to that inner dialogue that you can sort of be, because I think tears are a confrontation between expectations and reality. Mm-hmm. And you're just,
absolutely.
And the tears are there to own that, okay, reality is kicking my ass here. I am not where I want to be. And I just I'm tearful for it because I'm so frustrated because of my expectation and reality are miles apart here. But I think it's the inner dialogue, the end that you say, kind of going back into pulling it up mm-hmm. from ourselves deeply to say, even though I look like I'm going to quit in this moment, I'm not going to quit because I know my inner resilience. I know my big picture commitment. And that I think a lot of what you said, also there's another phrase, which reminds, you know, it's about your commitment. It's not about how you feel about your commitment mm-hmm. at any time in that journey. And so you, as long as you hold on to, this is what I'm committed to, we can have all sorts of uncomfortable feelings within that commitment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I view my business like my marriage. It's going to be times where you like it. It's going to be times where you don't like it, but guess what? You're in it.
I almost feel like sometimes with jobs, they can change their mind at any time. We no longer have budget for this department. We no longer like what you're doing here. So I think for me, where I'm at right now, I like that stability. I like kind of, I don't know what happens after 18 months, but I do know where I am now. And I really appreciate that security because within that, I feel like I can be more creative. I can now, it's like, oh, let's play with content. Let's play with stories. Let's see what I can do kind of creatively. Let's dig deep into like what I can learn.
I love it. I love it. I school for me was, I don't want to say it was challenging. It was challenging. I don't want to say the word, but it was. But now I just take everything, not necessarily day by day, but that's exactly what I do. I take it day by day. I'm the type of person and you would think because I, you know, own a business, it's like when you always have a lot on your plate. But I'm the person that if I have too much on my plate, I get overwhelmed. So I have to kind of just take things one second, one literally minute at a time. But I can say that I can appreciate the education that I do get because I just finished a semester of school. So I haven't completely given up on it. I just go at my own pace. But what I will do is in between time, I get like certifications like crazy. Like we was talking about Coursera. I'm like, oh, I do the exact same thing. But I do that. So it's great. I will have to say all in all, it's great. Education is extremely important, you know, especially I'll be honest for me, education, because it's like, it wasn't granted for my people. It wasn't granted for my ancestors. So it's like, I may not go in the traditional sense, but I'm gonna get the knowledge that I need. I'm not going to let their lives just fail. I have I don't know how many greats, but it's a lot. It's a great, 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 great cousin. She helped fight for women's voting rights. I didn't know that. I learned that on Ancestry. So you don't want this. Oh, okay. No, I come from greatness. I can't just let that be nothing. So education is valuable here in this house.
And I do data science. And when I was doing my urban planning and data science, it the numbers play out and just show that the more education you have, the more income you have. It's just a fact. And that there's a direct correlation between now into what you were saying about being an African-American woman and the history there. Honestly, a huge part of my urban planning degree was learning about racism that I didn't understand, because I would just go naively in my head just with this idea of like, well, I'm not a racist, but I didn't understand what it meant. Like, I didn't understand how much difficulty and suffering and how much our cities are engineered the way they are at the on this sort of racist basis. And especially when we had white flight and the suburbs and how the urban centers were just destroyed and purposefully. And it was just a huge thing that in my consciousness. And now that it's become in my consciousness, I can't not want to do something to be helpful around it. You know, even if it's helping more people understand how did we get here.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I actually appreciate you saying that really and respectfully, because, you know, the one thing that I've learned is that people don't know, you know, and as long as we don't know, we'll never be able to fix the problem.
There's a fabulous book out there called The Color of Law. And it really talks about how law was used in urban planning to create the ghetto, create the urban poor, create these
it's like the
divisions.
Fifth time I've heard about this book. I need to read it. Literally, this is like the fifth time I've heard about this book. I need to go get it.
Well, I'm a big, since the thing that's gotten me through graduate school has been audio. So I do Audible, and you can just also listen to it. It's okay. A big, that's, I like, because we have so much reading in grad school, I have discovered Microsoft Edge for PDFs, and I just say, read it to me, read aloud. And I get through so much more reading. So if you do want to pick up a book or a Kindle, go for it. But if you also just want to hit play, I've definitely adopted my love for Audible. I get through a lot more content that way.
Beautiful.
It's a great book. It really just explains a lot about, you know, how we're here today and then a lot. And I think even like people talk, I mean, we can get into a whole other conversation about this, but I think, you know, people talk about reparations and I'm like, the reparations to me, my view is needs to happen with a reinvestment in cities, in communities. It needs to be money into communities. It needs to be money into education. Sometimes when like a lot of traumas happen to adults through their whole life, it's really hard to fix. And then you get a drug addiction, you get criminal records, you get all these other stuff. It's really hard to fix that. But if you can start with the youth and educate and support and help the next generation, you're in a lot better place.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sometimes when I'm going through my own neighborhood and I just kind of, you know, and depending on where you've been in Chicago, you know, you see a lot of abandoned buildings and things like that. And I used to wonder, like, who owns this building? Why do they just let it? Why do just let it be like this? Like, take care of your property. And then I learned that a lot of banks own these buildings and that the banks are not allowing people to buy the buildings to fix the buildings. So it's when once I'm slowly learned, like, the whole bigger domino effect, it's just like a lot of things were probably set up that way on purpose to probably discourage certain groups of people. Hence why I'm doing higher, faster, further. I want there to be resources. It's like, it's okay. I know what's happening over here, but look over here. There's still hope and we can still build. We can still create change. We can still create a whole different future.
Yes. And that is also what the positive that I got out of it is by seeing that it's so engineered, you can re-engineer it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Absolutely. Why I come back to, you know, to empower communities, to educate communities, to fund communities. It really is community is the power. Community is the base. And to get it coming up from a community, and that's really understanding stakeholder engagement and really just there's a lot that can be done there. I think another issue that we're seeing coming up lately in the conversation is that more cities are becoming aware of this disconnect of a good neighborhood, a bad neighborhood, and saying, hey, as a city, how can we do our part to make things better? And one of the inequities is trees. Trees is a huge thing. If you want to know the difference between a good neighborhood and what's considered a not good neighborhood, it's trees.
Yeah.
And that they clean the air, they provide shade. The issues you have is, so if someone is in an owner-occupied building, they typically care for their and plant their own trees on their property. And the city, because they pay higher taxes and have a voice with the city because they live there and they own it, get the trees planted. They tend to have more open space and parks and things around them. And a lot of the poor neighborhoods are renter occupied. And so those owners don't put trees there. Those residents have no voice with the city to get trees put in there. And so now what's happening is the cities are kind of saying, oh, we're embracing diversity, equity, inclusion. We're embracing, you know, seeing this disconnection. And so if you read, for example, the Denver City Plan, they're really talking about like, wow, we're like seeing for the first time, there's these disconnected neighborhoods that don't have complete sidewalks and are lacking in tree cover. So we're to go in and we're going to fix this. And then the residents, and this is not only in Denver, but in a number of other cities, are really upset about this. And the city's like, well, we're trying to make your environment nicer. And they're like, yeah, but you're now outpricing us from our own neighborhood. You're ripping at the fabric of our community because we're a tight neighborhood and we understand we're disadvantaged and we have limited resources, but we're here. And if you come in and make this nicer, we don't really trust you. You've never been good to us in the past. How is this actually improving the quality of our lives? Because we're renters and we're easily displaced.
Events and factors, when you kind of understand what happens a little bit in the background and watch it unfold. That's crazy, isn't it?
And that's today.
Yeah. Yeah, that's wild to me. And it's like, change hasn't gone, you know, too far, but we're going to get there. We're almost there.
Well, I think that's why these conversations are really, really important to have and to just sort of point to and say, hey, these things are real. And there's some really good resources too if people want to understand a bit more of the issues and where we came from and why this is. And these are conversations that I want to be part of.
But that's the importance of research, wanting to gain knowledge, you know, because I mean, it's not just going to fall out the sky, you know, so that's the power of it. And I wish that more of us would do it to gain an understanding, because again, once we 100% fully understand what exactly the problem is, then we know how to handle it. But I feel like as long as everybody kind of doesn't do their research, doesn't gain any knowledge, we all just kind of have opinions, then we can't really attack the problem properly.
Yep. And what we also learn is that there's a thing called wicked problems, and there are no easy answers. Mm-hmm. And we talk about even like, do we add more trees and make these places nicer? Do we add that metro and make it more convenient for people to get to work? Or do we, but then we have to take into the cost of people's security and stability and does their rent increase? And, you know, is there anything the government can do to kind of step in and help the situation? Or is it just free market? And so all of these things kind of fall into a category of wicked problems. And another wicked problems is that the more money you have, the cleaner environment you live in. And the less money you have, the more that you're willing to locate yourself next to industry and other things that have toxins and other things. And so we then end up with all these health disparities.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's many ways. And so when it comes to a wicked problem, it there are no easy answers, but to sort of start to understand the different stakeholders, the different point of views, the different issues, and then just start chipping away at them slowly. There's never going to be one right answer, but there's mm-hmm. going to be little things that can be done collectively that can start to whittle away at these wicked problems.
Absolutely.
So it's... And I think for like what you said, and I think this all comes back to it because it's a different kind of wicked problem, but the idea of women in the workforce, women of color, and just understanding like where we feel like we fit into the corporate chessboard. And I think that's one of the things that when I first started this program, there was a lot of eagerness that I had to sort of rejoin the workforce. And as I've gone, I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to hang back and sort of see what can I do on my own creatively and sort of build my own table.
Exactly.
And then if my table wants to sit next to someone else's table and we, you know, then that's another thing. But I realize like it doesn't serve me to show up being sort of so humble in a way that sort of says, oh, I'll do anything and I'll move anywhere that you want me to be. Now I'm like, wait, no, I've taken on this new commitment in my life. It's always been there. But now, like I said, I just have this heightened awareness and this role and responsibility with my parents. And so I look at jobs and I'm like, you want me to come into your office? Well, there's no way, it just doesn't work, that it's going to be either next to my mom's house or next to my dad's house when they live on opposite sides of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm now realizing, like, how much, if I want to just be in integrity with my own commitments, how much I have to write my own ticket and essentially create my own path. And so I honor and respect your doing the same thing and saying, hey, you know what? This is the culture that I want to create. These are the problems I want to solve. This is the job that I want to do. This is the people that I want to do it with. This is the people I want to do it for. And then I have this freedom to work with these nonprofits as I choose, for higher, further, faster, and that you can, you know, solve these interesting problems that it sounds like, you know, other companies aren't going to necessarily give you that flexibility, that freedom, that support to do that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm so sorry. It's a fly. Absolutely. You know, I love my freedom more than anything, you know, and especially being a parent, I'm a very, very, very much involved. I like to kind of be at everything and different things like that. So a lot of challenges I have, you know, working for others before I was working for myself, was I didn't have the flexibility nor the freedom that I needed. So it's wonderful when you just learn how much control you actually have over your life. But I will say this, we do have a lot more opportunities here today than back in the day, you know, so I kind of understand that as well. You know, my mom, you know, sometimes she'll be like, you do so much, I don't know how you're able to do it. She's like, I would have been crazy with you guys as kids, you know, trying to do everything that you're doing. But I had to understand and realize that back then she didn't have all the opportunities that are here present here today. So
that is true. And I feel like, for example, being a Women Tech Maker ambassador, I am so incredibly grateful for this opportunity that we have, this opportunity to network with each other, to collaborate creatively, to learn from each other, to share resources and opportunities. It's been an amazing thing for me, especially as I was new in my owning my identity in tech, owning my identity in STEM, and having them affirm that and then put me in a community with all of these brilliant minds, and that we can get to know each other and then have this amazing mentor support has just been something that I so value.
Absolutely. I love Women Tech Makers. I'm hoping to be able to, I'm actually hoping that will be majority of my team when I go into smart homes, create and design the smart homes, because I feel like, you know, the community just has so many different women from so many different parts of the world that have different backgrounds. And I feel like literally every single woman that is a part of Women Tech Makers can bring something to the table. And so far, that's exactly what I learned. Every single person has been different from A to Z. And I love that about the community more than anything.
Very much so. And yet also very, you know, bright, very kind, very generous, very much committed to, you know, seeing the world be a better place, bringing other people up, definitely the ability to just want to help and want to inspire other people.
Absolutely.
And bringing everybody along with us. And I think that's where we're, you know, given that privilege to be the spokespeople.
Absolutely, yes.
So as we wrap it up, give me some highlights from some of the events that you produced.
Oh, man. So I would have to say my biggest highlight would have to be from International Women's Day. We had a really, really good turnout. I think I honestly went from having almost no speakers for this event, I was going to be the only speaker, until like kind of getting closer to the midnight hour, people's availability started to open up, and you know, we was able to kind of gain a lot of traction. So if you want to be honest with you, the fact that the event actually happened is my highlight. advice to anybody: don't take no for an answer. That's always my closing saying. Don't take no for an answer.